Hello, my dear audience. I'm Peter Resnick, and welcome to the Dr. Peter Resnick Toolbox. Thank you very much again to those who send me emails. I truly appreciate your feedback. And as you can see, I follow your advice regarding the topics you want me to address in my shows. I want to remind everyone of my intention to make this show an interactive experience. That is, I welcome your input, your comments, and your questions. You can call me anytime, even during the show. Actually, I was hoping that some of you would call during my talks about the night dreams, and I would work with the caller right here on the air. The caller would benefit, and the audience would benefit by being a part of the experience and learn how to do it for themselves. I'm still welcoming the calls with your night dreams, even today, even though the subject will be quite different. I will put aside whatever subject I'm covering at any time you call and work with you on your night dream. And that is because I believe that learning how to understand and engage your night dreams is one of the most important tools I can teach you. And the number to call is 888-874-4888. Again, 888-874-4888. If you cannot call, you can email me at drpeterresnick@gmail.com. You can also visit my website, drpeterresnick.com. There is a lot of interesting stuff there and more coming. My son Aaron is redoing, how do you call it, makeover my website and putting a lot of my programs to be downloaded. It will take some time though. I have a lot of programs. I also decided that every Tuesday I will announce what the subject of the following week's show will be, so that those of you who are interested in the subject that is coming up would make sure that you can be here with us and possibly have an opportunity to inform friends who, if you believe, would benefit from the talk. The subject of today's talk is stress of life. The subject of the next week's show is overcoming addictive thoughts, feelings, and substances. So, ladies and gentlemen, stress. I'm not going to talk only about stress caused by the pandemic, though what I intend to share with you today can be utilized to calm your anxieties about what's going on these days. But the focus of today's show will be the existential stress. It was here before the pandemic. It is here with us now. It will be here when the pandemic, God willing, is over. By the way, the word stress, which comes from the Latin word distringere, simply means to stretch out. Stretching out, that is, going beyond the known, the habitual, moves us to progress. Human beings were suffering, for example, from cold weather. They stretched out. They were creative, and they created different kinds of clothing. It was hard for people to walk long distances, so they invented various means of transportation. At every stage of human development, there was a challenge which forced us to stretch out. So in truth, stress is a natural resistance of life, which propels us to adapt, to be creative, to find solutions to challenges, and to grow. It is the inability or unwillingness to accept this natural resistance that creates distress. Dis simply means against. When we're going against stress, rather than facing it and welcoming it as a teacher, we become angry, anxious, fearful, insecure, disappointed, resentful, and a whole array of other self-damaging feelings. So though from now on I will use the term stress, because everyone is used to this term, you now understand that what I'm really talking about is our failure to accept life as is, with all its natural occurrences and challenges. Of course, it would be wonderful to have learned in school all this, to study from the first grade how to deal with tension, pressure, and frustration, how to control or use healthy techniques to release or channel anger. It would be great if right from the first year of school we learned how to negotiate and resolve problems with those around us. How does one deal with guilt? And why do we feel feelings of guilt in the first place? And what about fear and anxiety? Does one need to go into some kind of counseling or psychotherapy to discover that many of the feelings that one tries to hide from the rest of the world are actually healthy? We had no trouble in school learning how to be tense. Nobody taught us how to be relaxed. A lot of teachers, even today, I know many teachers, and as I speak about how they teach children to deal with challenges of communication, they say, well, that's what parents should teach them. So many teachers feel today that the all these things about stress management, communication management, must be taught at home. By whom? Who properly taught these things to our parents? Why cannot we break unwanted habits or behavior patterns? For example, if I tell you now, this and this is not good for you, why cannot you just snap out of it? Well, I have to tell you, it doesn't work. We keep these emotional and behavioral patterns robot-like, responding automatically to specific triggers. That's what happens. There are so many self-help books on the market today. Do they really make a dent in our behavior? They all tend to agree with some basic principles and make a lot of sense. Yet taking these healthy principles and actually applying them to our lives seems to be another story. Why? The answer is that understanding these principles on a conscious level is not enough. It is the subconscious mind that most of the time controls our behavior. Look, I came originally 40 years ago from the Soviet Union, where our modern understanding of human as well as animal behavior was born. So I will share with you something, and probably some of you studied this if you studied, took you in college, Psych 101. In 1927, I believe, a Russian physiologist, Ivan Pavlov, published his theories of classical conditioning. His studies have formed the major basis for understanding the rituals of all our behavior. To summarize his work, Pavlov put a group of dogs in a room, and prior to feeding each of the dogs, he would ring the bell. In the beginning, when the dogs saw their food coming, they would salivate. You know, he inserted this little tube. Within a short period of time, Pavlov found that the dogs were also salivating when they heard the bell ring. In the dog's mind, food and the bell were connected to each other. Pavlov later found that he could ring the bell 10 times during the day, while feeding the dogs only twice. After the bell rang, and the dogs would still salivate 12 times. As long as there was an occasional, or as he termed it, intermittent reinforcement, the dogs held onto this connection. The habit then became locked into dog's subconscious mind. Believe it or not, we have conscious mind, and the dogs have, animals, all animals have subconscious mind. The human beings follow the same patterns that the dogs. It is possible to see the evidence of this in almost every habitual behavior that we humans have. those of you who are cigarette smokers know this very well. A cigarette smoker has 90% of his or her cigarettes in the same time each day. The overeater follows the same eating patterns. They will snack after dinner or go on a binge when they're upset. In fact, I don't want to forget to tell you, I will actually dedicate one whole show just talking about our eating challenges and how to master our relationship with food, because some people emailed me and asked me to talk about challenges with eating. Going back to our subject, a person who often gets angry or anxious tends to feel that way in response to the same particular stimuli, following quite a predictable pattern of behavior. Once a behavior in response to a particular stimuli is well ingrained into the subconscious mind, the behavioral response, as difficult is to break as any habit would be. And the price of these habitual and emotional responses, I will tell you what the price is. Let me see. I prepared for you actually some statistics. Yeah, 80 to 85% of all visits to primary care physicians are stress-related. Medical journals around the world publish a growing number of articles linking stress with virtually every physical illness. Although stress may not be the sole cause of an illness, it is almost always one of the major contributing factors. But here's very interesting statistics, I think. Pay attention to the numbers. About 800,000 people in the United States die from cardiovascular disease each year. That is one out of three deaths in America. Just listen to the numbers. $800,000 people die every year. In contrast, our country was totally put on hold and the economy was shut down in 2020 because 400,000 people died from coronavirus. But 800,000 people die every year. Isn't that strange? Shouldn't we consider that that epidemic of stress must be addressed before anything? Over 100 million Americans have high blood pressure. Each year, 4 million Americans are diagnosed with having ulcers. 18 million Americans are alcoholics. Stress is also suspected to aggravate chronic backache. Here is a list: arthritis, allergies, hypothyroidism, vertigo, and multiple sclerosis. Dermatologists find that stress is a factor in many skin disorders such as hives, eczema, and dermatitis. It's also being associated with many gastrointestinal disorders, including irritable colon and gastritis. Some of the excess hormones that the adrenal glands release during repeated stress responses can interfere with the body's immune system. And the person becomes more susceptible, guess to what? To bacteria and viruses. Research over the last 50 years has also clearly demonstrated the relationship between stress and cancer. Well, many people have recognized that the stress is a serious problem and have become increasingly health conscious. They go for regular checkups, they try to exercise and improve their diets, they take herbs and vitamins, they practice Tai Chi, they do yoga. And these efforts, I believe, are wonderful. They're useful. But not enough. I believe that taking good care of your body will contribute to your good health. From what we know, despite all the efforts, people continue to be plagued by high degrees of stress, in spite of changing diets, in spite of going to the gym, and increasingly high rates of serious physical illnesses also shows that not much dent really is made by all the physical changes that people made. Why do you think it's so? Because we have forgotten the old age wisdom linking the integrity of our body to the workings of the mind. You already heard, I think, of one of my first talks, I quoted the father of Western medicine. Yeah, when I think when I spoke about mind-body principles of mind-body therapy, Hippocrates said, I would rather know what sort of a man has a disease than what sort of a disease a man has. He understood that our inner lives, our thoughts, our emotions, pay as much of a role in our well-being as our physical state or symptoms. Let me give you an example. If you have been overly tired during the day, have been experiencing headaches, backaches, or insomnia, it's possible that you just overworked a bit and need some rest. But if after taking some time off, you still have the same symptoms, it's possible that your body is sending you a critical warning sign of a greater imbalance in your entire mind-body system. It's not only the body that is suffering. Taking a few days off from work or taking some medicine may temporarily alleviate this discomfort, but the underlying cause, which may be the root of the problem, will remain. Just imagine being in a closed room, and there is a stove there, and there is a gas leak, of which you are unaware. After a while, you realize that you're getting a headache. You decide you go for a walk. You walk out, feels good, nice day. Maybe you stop at the local pharmacy, you buy some of over-the-counter pain medication, and it works. You feel better. You're ready to go home. But did anything change at home? If you do return to that room, there is a chance you may get gas poisoning. The headache is actually your friend and your early warning system telling you that something is wrong. This warning can only help, though, if you can understand and act upon it. 2,500 years ago, a Greek philosopher, Epictetus, you probably noticed I like Greek philosophers, Epictetus said, it is not the things or events that affect us, but the attitude that we take toward them. Indeed, one may be in the most turbulent environment and feel at ease, and one may be in the most serene place on earth and still be in turmoil. It is your attitudes and your beliefs and your interconnections, your interactions with yourself and others that keep you relaxed or build up stress. Let me tell you actually about a study that was done many years ago, and it's quite an impressive study. It was done at Stanford University, I believe. Researchers studied 1,035 patients who had a heart attack. 95% of these patients reported of having gone through some particularly stressful experience prior to having a heart attack. All patients were divided into three groups. One group was simply examined by a physician. The other was examined by a physician and advised on diet and exercise. The third group, in addition to an examination by a physician and diet and exercise instruction, was taught how to change their attitudes and behavior. All patients were followed for 5 years. And the findings showed that the patients who received information on diet and exercise had half as many recurring heart attacks than those who only saw physicians. But the last group, the group that was taught how to change attitudes and behavior, had one-third of recurring heart attacks compared to the, quote, diet and exercise group, and one fourth recurring heart attacks compared to the patients who just saw a physician. So what are we talking here about? The study demonstrated that 3 out of 4 people could have avoided having a heart attack if they had learned how to change their attitudes and behavior. Is that impressive or what? You know, I worked with people who are stressed and depressed and anxious for so many years. As a result of my observations of working with so many people and doing research, I have developed actually a program a while ago already called Staying Healthy in a Stressful World. And have been teaching this now for a while. The program identifies, among many sources of stress, the 3 major, let's call them attitudinal challenges. I used to call it plagues, but my students said people will not want to listen to you. Don't call them plagues. So, okay, we have 3 major challenges, or let's call them errors. Many of them of us face them. It's in our relationship with ourselves and others. These challenges, I believe, contribute to this breakdown in our system, physical and emotional system. And they are judgment, expectation, and doubt. Again, as I said, there are other challenges, but these ones are the major ones, and I want to talk to you about them. I will try to cover today at least completely, thoroughly, at least one of them, maybe more. If you get interested in the whole program, it can be downloaded on my website, drpeterresnik.com. But before I begin to talk about the first one, I want to preempt it by making sure that if you decide to follow my instructions, you do not get yourself more distressed than you were in the first place. What comes to my mind is how actually one time I did get somebody more distressed. And it was a boss, a person who was running his own company, a large company. He had, I think, 10 or 12 managers, and he owned the whole building, and very generous man, built a big gym so people could, offered people to have 1.5 hour lunchtime so that for 30, 40 minutes people could go during the day and exercise, but he never did. And so I spoke to him. He told me about how stressed he was, and I said, listen, you're not taking time. You're not investing in yourself. Go and take some breaks and exercise like every other person does. And a couple of weeks later, I saw him and said, I'm more stressed than ever. I go to this gym and I see all these young people working out and doing so much more. And I have to push myself. So he created stress, competing with others, even in the place where he should be relaxed. So let me give you a couple of key elements to be aware of if you want to succeed in making positive changes. By making changes in your life, I'm referring to changes that last and pretty much accomplish the end result of what you want, and that is life of balance and peace. I will tell you what these key elements are. 1, change should be a gentle process. Trying to force anything is likely to break it. After we speak about the first challenge, and I told you it's judgment, I will give you an assignment. Do not expect yourself to be Mr. or Mrs. Perfect. See the whole picture. And after 1 week, you find there is some progress, celebrate it. And make a commitment to continue. Fear of failure or judging yourself for still not being successful enough in pursuing this accomplishment will definitely make you immobilize you. Remember, the biggest regret should be always be that you never tried. So your job is to do your best. This is all that you can do. Number two, set a reasonable plan for yourself. How long you will practice the ideas that I share with you, when and how you will evaluate how successful you are. It's good to evaluate yourself, but against yourself, not against anybody else, to assess how well you are doing and how much you want to invest making an effort to practice what I ask you to practice. Number three, the only thing that you owe yourself in life is your best shot. Your best shot may vary day from day to day, but everything less than your best shot cheats you and those who are around you. Number four, everybody slides back. Everybody has setbacks. You don't need to worry about it. More important is your ability to catch an old behavioral pattern and immediately do something about it. Allow yourself what people call to fail. But in truth, I don't believe there is such thing as failure when you're trying something. Failure only occurs when you do nothing. Every person who has ever been successful will tell you that it's very valuable to what you call fail. You learn from your efforts regardless what the results may be. Think about the children. Would children ever learn how to walk after falling down time and time again, and they decided, hell with it, it's easier not to crawl, not to walk. They would continue crawling. So you have to be a cheerleader of yourself. Imagine hiring someone to succeed for you. And the person, let's say, you're going to pay someone to do a good job for you. And they say, well, let me go and see if I can do something for you. Would you pay them? Or you would choose to pay someone who would say, yes, I'm going to give my best shot. I will put all my energy and I will be successful. Of course, you would choose the second person. That's exactly what you want to do. You want to make a commitment to practice and succeed. So now we'll talk about this first major source of stress, and that is judgment. I want you to know, I started working on this issue, judgment, over 30 years ago, and I cannot tell you I'm 100% free from judgment. I noticed much faster if I judge, and I would say I judge way, way less myself and others than I did 30 years ago. But once in a while, I catch myself judging. It's a process. Growth is a process. It's not, you know, the road to becoming the best of yourself is always under construction. So virtually every spiritual tradition in one way or another teaches judge not. Why not? One may ask, do we not need to evaluate our thoughts or consequences of our actions in order to see right from wrong? Right? Absolutely. Observe and evaluate, yes. Judge, no. Let's look at both. First, observation and evaluation. As we observe an idea or an event or an action, we can become aware of the consequences of that idea, event, or action. We may evaluate these consequences as satisfying. Or if they're not, we may decide to look for an alternative way of thinking, acting, in order to bring about different, more desirable consequences. Let's now take an example. Suppose you run the red light. As a result, you almost caused an accident or hits the pedestrian. You did not intend to drive through a red light. It just happened. You made an error. Remember Forrest Gump, shit happens. It always does. You slow down, or maybe you even stop your car if it was a serious mistake that you made. Your heart is beating fast, your palms are sweat, you come down. You begin to think about what could have happened. You ask yourself if this is a typical pattern in your driving. You make a conscious, serious decision to drive differently, perhaps to become more attentive, not to talk on the cell phone while driving, or some other resolution. It doesn't matter. It's just an example. As a result of this experience, you learned from the consequences and move on. Now let's look at what happens when judgment enters the picture. So here you are. You have just run the red light. Your first thought is, look what I've done. I could have killed this person, or I could have done this and this. How could I be so reckless? Where was my head? They should lock me up and throw the key away. Believe me, this avalanche of self-criticism does not make you a better driver. Chances are, because of your mind still being back there at the fateful intersection, you start paying attention to the here and now. And this may cause you to make yet another mistake while driving, which will only intensify your self-criticism. Take another example. You witness some injustice. Perhaps it's an injustice on a global scale, or it is something happening right in front of you. You think, how can this be? What is happening? This is terrible, horrible, ugly. You go on and on, getting more upset and more tense. You feel that your outrage is justifiable. What is the term? Righteous, self-righteous indignation. Your fists are clenched, your mind is racing, your body is aching. Think about the effects of your anger. Your mental, emotional, and physical state are weakened. You have less ability to constructively address the situation. Sometimes people speak of anger as a primary emotion. It's not. Anger is a consequence of your interpretation of events or people and the judgment of that experience. Because if you look at something and you make one kind of a decision, you may like it. You make up your mind of what that means to you. But if you judge, then you become angry. And you may also look at something that you disagree with, and you make up your mind, you say, this is unacceptable, I will act differently, or I will address this issue, I don't know, at the conference, or I will address it with my family members. That's a call to action. It's not judgment, but just judging and being outraged. It doesn't produce any good. Now, I would like you to consider an alternative way of thinking and responding. Just think, life is, and people are. Life is, and people are not the way you wish them to be, but the way they are. Why, for example, shouldn't people act in the way that something is that seems to be appalling or nonsensical to you? Perhaps they grew up in a different environment, maybe in a different value system, with a different value system, different teachers, different parents. Perhaps if you were like them and had all the experiences, grew up in their environment, you would act and think the same way. You may want these people to be different. You may think about what you can do to help them understand your viewpoint. And finally, you may decide to take steps to initiate change or to resolve a specific problem. But by judging, you simply run the risk of imprisoning yourself in a continuous cycle of anger, frustration, that sooner or later leads to apathy if you didn't get what you want. These emotions are not only incapacitating, they can lead to physical illness. There is actually yet another negative consequence of judging. Recent studies in the field of neurophysiology demonstrate that when we are stressed, which happens when we judge, as I said, the hormone called norepinephrine is released in our brain. And the flow of norepinephrine shuts down the locus coeruleus. It's a part of the brain responsible for creativity. And it's really quite a recent discovery. When this happens, we lose our ability to constructively resolve stressful challenges. Think about it. So when we're stressed and we want to address somehow a problem, norepinephrine is released and we cannot resolve the problem because we're stressed. You see, we fall back upon the old, well-established habitual reactions of the past. How many times have you promised yourself you would not reach out for that cookie or light up that cigarette or raise your voice with your spouse or your children, and yet you find yourself doing so time and time again? This may be very much because the judgment of yourself or others triggered anger or some other destructive emotion that paralyzed your creativity and hindered your ability to act in new constructive ways. What do they say? Insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results, right? So this is insanity. Very often people get angry at other people for doing something that those people did time and time and time again. So you know the person will act this way and still react the same way. So the trick is learn to accept. Accept it doesn't mean to live with it. So if somebody acts in a way that is not acceptable for you, you can leave. You can choose not to be part of it. But to recognize that this person is the way he or she is. And most of the time, when somebody is angry with you, or somebody behaves in a certain way, look at them and think, this person was this way before me. This person is with me this way, and this person will be this way after me. So it has nothing to do with you. Most of the time, it has nothing to do with you. So when you look at a person acting a certain way, you say to yourself mentally, this is his or her story. Don't make it your story. It becomes your story once you begin to judge and resent people for being that way. They are who they are. So just because I tell you this, can you suddenly become non-judgmental? Well, you eliminated your judgment completely. You are my teacher, if you can do it. I'm telling you, I have been working on this for over 30 years. I'm not finished. Firmly established patterns of behavior require more than understanding to disappear. The first step toward freeing yourself from judgment is to gently acknowledge and accept this part of yourself. The more you are forgiving and accepting of this tendency, the easier it will be for you to notice it. Isn't it interesting? Eventually, you will become so skillful. If you simply just make it up your mind, I want to notice if I judge. I'm not talking about observations. It's normal to, it's you have to observe reality in order to function. So if somebody is raising his her voice, you can say this person is raising his voice. There is a reason for them to do this. Maybe they didn't learn good manners. Maybe this is the only way they can express themselves. Maybe they think they can accomplish more by raising their voice. This is their choice. It has nothing to do with you. But the moment you begin to say, how dare he? Oh, now you are part of the story. So you simply watch yourself judging. And if you notice that you're judging, you become aware of it. And the moment you notice that you are judging yourself or others, you say, here, goes and give your name, whatever. I would say, here goes Peter judging. Not, oh, here I go again. That's already judging. And if you find yourself judging yourself for judging, you simply say, here goes Peter judging yourself for judging. All you, I'm telling you, do not try to stop. It's like going 70 miles per hour and trying to stop or make a sharp turn. Simply become aware of judging, acknowledge it, and move on. So here is my assignment for taming this self-destructive impulse. The intention for this assignment is to transform judgment into acceptance of all that happens as an opportunity for learning and growth. For the following week, take 1 week. Nothing of what I tell you today is true unless it's true to you. The only way you will know whether or not what I say is true, whether or not has what I have said to you so far has any value, is if you go and give it a try. So for the following week, become a witness, an observer of your emotional responses. And any time you pass a judgment upon yourself or anybody else, you say to yourself, here goes your name, judging. This is all, nothing else. It's important that you don't try to stop yourself from judging, but you only notice, acknowledge, and move on. Now, when you have your first assignment, I want you to kind of make up your mind. I am committing myself to doing this work for 7 days. At the end of each day, spend maybe a minute or a little bit of time examining your experience. Rate your ability to be non-judgmental or even ability to notice that you are judging on a scale from 1 to 10, as 10 being totally conscious and aware or totally non-judgmental. Write down the results. Again, if you see that the results are not very high, that's okay. So you next day you do it again. If during the day you feel stressed, now I want you to give you little tools to help you out while you're practicing to be non-judgmental, while you're practicing being a witness. So now I'm talking about situational stress. If you are stressed during the day, stop. Step one, identify where in the body you feel tension. You see, psychologists most of the time will ask you to think, what is it that is bothering you? Yes? But remember, stress, anger, anxiety, they are not just mental and emotional experiences. They are physical experiences in your body. And that's what you first want to address. Acknowledge where you feel tension in your body. Second, because tension usually people experience either in the stomach or in the chest, sometimes in the head. Step two, acknowledge if you can, what specifically is the cause of this tension. And if you don't know, that's fine. Step three, make a decision that you will address the issue to the best of your ability. If you acknowledge, if you understand what is triggering tension. And once you take care of one who is to address the issue, that is you, then you make step four. Bring your attention to the place in your body where you feel tension. And slowly breathe out. And then breathe in. Slowly breathe out. And breathe in. Remember, you want to breathe in on the count from 1 to 5. You actually, to occupy your mind, say as you're breathing in, you're counting from 1 to 5. As you're breathing out, you're breathing out slowly, counting from 1 to 9. But you always want to start by breathing out, not breathing in. because by breathing out, you stimulate parasympathetic nervous system that actually triggers a relaxation response, because you stimulate vagus. It's a quieting nerve which goes from your brain, from medulla, to lungs, heart, and stomach. As you count while breathing out, think or imagine in any way you can that you are breathing out all the tension in the form of dark smoke or some other image. And as you breathe in, think or imagine that you are breathing in white light. Very soon you may feel relaxed. Then, as you promised yourself, begin addressing the issue at hand. And if at any moment you begin tense, feeling tense again, stop whatever you're doing or thinking about and repeat the whole routine again. Please don't go now thinking, oh yeah, then I will have to do it all day. That's not true. Most of the time it's not the case. Do the routine. If you interrupt this negative pattern several times in a row, I'm telling you, you will discover that it works. That you can indeed interrupt the negative slide down into a state of stress. The trick is not to think about the problem that caused the stress, not the stimulus of the stress, but focus your attention and imagining dark smoke out, white light in. Be kind to yourself. That's very important. Be kind to yourself while working on these life-changing issues. And as you do, you will feel happier, healthier, and more at ease in your relationship with yourself and others. Now, I want to give you, I'm looking at the clock because I remember I have a limited amount of time. I want to give you also some what I call physical stress busters. It's part of the program. The program is way more than what I can share with you today. But as I said, you can get the whole program. So I want to give you four very simple exercises for you while you're maybe sitting at your desk. Remember, we are not designed, we're physical beings, we're animals, social animals. We are not designed to sit at desks all day. So in this exercise, it will take you 3-4 minutes. So if you are sitting now at your desk, just move a little bit away from your desk. Sit back in your chair with your hands relaxed and by your sides. Put both feet flat on the floor. Now slowly inhale, extend your right leg, and point your toes out as you inhale. Now exhale and point your toes back toward your body. Once again, inhale as you point your toes out. Exhale as you point them toward your body. Next, roll your foot in circles clockwise 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And now counterclockwise. 1, 2, 3. And put your right foot back down on the floor. Now slowly inhale, extend your left leg and point your toes out. Exhale and point your toes back toward your body. Once again, inhale as you point your toes out. And exhale as you point your toes toward your body. Next, roll your foot in circles 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And now the other way. 1, 2, 3. And put your foot back down on the floor. Simple, right? The second exercise. As you're sitting in your chair with your hands relaxed by your sides, inhale and roll your shoulders up to your ears as you inhale, and then let them go down as you exhale. Repeat. shoulders up to your ears and you inhale, and back down as you exhale. One more time, shoulders up, all the way up to your ears, and down as you exhale. And now third exercise. Slowly roll your head and neck in circles 3 times in each direction, but do it very slowly and gently. One. Take all this time for one rotation. Now two. And three. The other direction now. One. Two. And three. And the final exercise. Clasp your hands behind your head. Bring your shoulder blades together, chest forward. Slowly inhale and turn your body as far to your right as you can. Your body is straight. Look over your right shoulder. Now exhale and go back to the center. Now slowly inhale and turn your head as far as you can to your left and look over your left shoulder. Exhale and go back to the center. Let's repeat. Slowly inhale and turn your body as far as you can to your right. Look over your right shoulder. Exhale and go back to the center. Now slowly inhale and turn your body as far as you can to your left. Look over your left shoulder. Exhale and go back to the center. And now put your hands down in a comfortable position. Sit quietly for a while with your eyes closed. And become aware of how your body feels. And then you can open your eyes if you had your eyes closed. There is much more in this program, in addition to dealing with the 3 major sources of stress, and we covered only one, I have the 14 mental exercises dealing with various stressful situations, what I call situational stress. And then also there is physical stress busters, and also 11 minute guided relaxation as well. As I said, you can download the whole program from my website, drpeterresnik.com. The name of the program is Staying Healthy in a Stressful World. I see still we have some time left for the show, so I want to give you a couple of exercises if I can. For situational stress. Let's do an exercise for guilt or regret about an error made during the day. Guilt literally means debt. Recognize if you are in debt. It is easier to pay the debt than to bear the weight of the debt unpaid. Make a decision to pay the debt or to make a correction of your error. Once you did that, you close your eyes and breathe out gently 3 times, long, slow exhalations, nice and easy inhalations, breathing out twice as slow as breathing in. Imagine yourself standing under the blue sky. In your heart, acknowledge the error that you have made and about your commitment to make the correction. Breathe out one time and see in the response of your acknowledgement a golden light, like a shower coming from above, washing off all your guilt. Feel it, the rays of the light touching your body, just like water, taking down all the negativity into the earth. When ready, gently breathe out one time and open your eyes. And here is another exercise. If you have come home, let's say, and have difficulties letting go of the day, your mind is still racing, or if you are a little bit stressed or feeling uneasy during the day, so you interrupt that dis-ease or not having ease, and you close your eyes and breathe out gently 3 times. Long, slow exhalations, nice and easy inhalations. Breathing out twice as slow as breathing in. And see yourself climbing a hill with the load of all your concerns and responsibilities on your shoulders. Think or imagine it being in whatever it is, whatever comes to your mind. Now you stop your climb, take off the load and drop it. See it roll all the way down. And with your new lightness, go uphill. And there you find a beautiful waterfall. Take all your clothes off and stand under the pure mountain water, cleansing and purifying yourself physically and emotionally. Now step out from under the waterfall. Let the sun dry your body. Find new clothes. Put it on. Notice how you feel. And then gently breathe out one time and open your eyes. I was planning to do another exercise, but we are running out of time, so I have to start saying goodbye to you. It was nice spending time with you. Now I can see all those people listening to me because I have been, as I said, getting nice emails from you. And as I said, next time, next Tuesday, we'll be talking about addictions. The talk will be overcoming addictive thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And now our hour together came to an end. Thank you for being with me today. I hope I will have your attention next Tuesday. Peace to all who want to live in peace. Adelante, get up to the beat, adelante to the beat. Segunda, comandé.